Hello and welcome to the Sensory Hour with me, David Damakin. This is episode one and I'm sat here with my very good friends Jack and Jenny just to give you a little introduction into what I'm doing here. Jack and Jenny have got a son who is on the autistic spectrum. We're going to talk through their journey of diagnosis, talk through maybe the early signs of possible autism. Did they know it was autism? What sort of support was out there? Things like that. As I've said in other episodes, which you will hear later on down the line, this is not a professional podcast. It's very much a homemade podcast. In a couple of the other episodes, you will hear children come in and out because it's just filmed in their home. And there may be children, cats, dogs, and all of that malarkey. So if you hear any noises, I will not be editing it out. It will just be there because it's just homemade. So, hello, Jack and Jenny.
Hello.
Hiya.
So, I suppose we'll start at the beginning. At what age did you think Noah may have autism? When did you feel like there might be something a little bit different, or was he developmentally slower? Was there anything that stood out to you early doors? Or did, like you said, when we weren't recorded, he was your first child, you just thought, is this the way that children sort of grow up?
I had niggling doubts in my mind with certain things, like how he would, when he started saying cheese, didn't he, and things like that, and then out of nowhere he stopped saying it.
Yeah, like he forgot him a little bit, didn't he? Which was a bit weird. But I didn't think anything, to be honest. I just thought, it's my first child, this is just how we're meant to go. I didn't think of autism. I literally didn't think anything of it.
Yeah.
To be fair, it's not until he had a 2-year checkup, someone come over and she was just like, "Oh, he's not giving any eye contact. He's really not sociable with you."
So did you think it was more personality traits in him rather than that this could be something neurologically?
I think they thought that. They didn't think autism straight away.
Okay.
They just thought he needed further checking. And then I got somebody else come over, and then she said, "No, he's too young," and then wouldn't pursue anything.
Okay, well that's a common thread with people with young children with autism, is they don't look to diagnose. When I was working in a special school 3 or 4 years ago, the age was 6. I don't know if that's lower now, but I think the thing will be is, from my point of view, is any early intervention that you can get is gold dust, because if you get it early, then
absolutely,
then you can look to progress and go, well, actually this works, that doesn't work, and you
that's
can work around
shown.
It yeah. So when this second person come around, was that like a health visitor type
visitor
person?
So yeah, they're both health visitors, but the other one was higher up, the second one.
Okay.
And she just said he's literally turned to, you know, boys tend to be slower at talking, you know, I think we should leave it and just give him some time.
So what were you seeing around that age though? So when the second health visitor came and they mentioned these things, did it put like a seed of doubt in your mind that actually maybe something might not be?
Yeah, definitely. I did start noticing the eye contact, that he kind of was so independent, doing his own thing, but I just thought, oh, he likes playing on his own, didn't really think much of it. And since then, I was like, oh no, he's not really talking much, is he? Because he literally said, what, 2 words at the age of 2?
So what did you do from that point? Did you go down the route of going to GPs, or did you leave it and just do some, like, self-diagnosing through
I spoke to nursery, because he went to nursery twice a week.
Okay.
And I just said, oh, the health visitor said that, and they said they'll keep an eye on him. And they said, look, we didn't know it was about the eye contact. But again, he was young.
They weren't supporting.
They thought speech, well, they thought not at nursery. That was preschool. But at nursery, they said maybe we should think about getting him into speech and language. And that's what started going through the process of things. Because speech and language were noticing things.
Mm. Okay, so from the point of from the second health visitor coming when he was 2?
Just turned 2, yeah.
When did the speech and language start?
It didn't start till the following year.
So you had a year.
It was about 7 months later.
So there was 7 months there, and I can imagine that there was a bit of anxiety created from you two, because you've been told this thing, your first child, you've been told, oh, it might be autism, but it's too early, we're not going to do anything now. Did you feel unsupported during that time, or were you just thinking, yeah, we're just going to keep going as we are?
I'm quite angry, because obviously...
He's coming up to nearly three, and things aren't changing,
I'm the type of person to research things and look behind the scenes of everything, and the more I looked, the more I found that early intervention therapy is one of the kids' only hopes for me.
But they weren't...
To lead a normal life, so I was getting really stressed.
But they weren't looking at autism, that was the issue at the beginning. They were doing different options. They got him checked, they did a brain scan thing on him, they did... checked his body, because he's got white marks on his body.
Oh, they thought he had that thing that you have, those tumours all over your body.
Yeah, they said, like, they don't do anything, but they're, like, yeah, they're slightly tumours over your body. Okay. If you have certain, you have three or more white marks on your body. And I think he had, what, two? So he didn't get classed as it. And they're just, like, pigments in the skin.
Okay.
So he went under all these other medical things.
Yeah, check
for and then autism came like last on the list for checking.
How did he cope with all these testings and things like that?
We were in out of hospital. Oh my god, I felt like I had appointments every couple of weeks.
No, it's not your typical.
He's
autistic child.
He didn't have breakdowns or anything like that.
Very calm.
But he did get concerned. He was worried, especially when he had to have the headpiece put on him.
Yeah.
We had to sit there for a whole hour without him moving. That was so hard. So we had to put loads of toys on our laps. I had to keep distracting him. I had to put the TV on. So it was hard to test him.
So with the first initial, going back to the second health visitor that said it may be autism, was this not relayed onto other professionals, or were they just saying, we're not going to even consider it for now?
We're not going to consider it for now.
I thought it was the GP who put forward for the testing.
The GP eventually got involved through speech and language. That was all the following year. Basically, the first year, nothing happened. It was the speech, it was health visitors, and then nothing happened. Said, leave it, I think he's too young. Then when it turned the following year, when he's about to turn three, speech and language started, the GP was like, maybe we should see things, because things weren't changing. But they just didn't want to go down autism. They wanted to test for everything else. So they did his ears that year.
Yeah.
He had blue ear. That delayed things. Or it could be his hearing. That's why he's not talking properly.
Yeah.
And I had to go in, and he couldn't do the tests, which was really hard, because they were giving him instructions and he didn't understand them. Yeah. And I knew he couldn't understand them. But to me, they're like, oh no, he's just not doing it. I was like, no, but he doesn't understand. And they wouldn't accept it. So, like, we wanted to come back again. I had to come back again. He wouldn't do it again. I said, he doesn't understand. They need to come back again. And then I got really angry on the third one, and I refused to come back. Because I know it wasn't his ears was the issue. And so they're like, you signed them off. I was like, yeah, I'm signing them off, because I'm not happy. And then they kind of listened to me. They took that whole year, and they wouldn't do anything.
So during that time, even though you as a parent, you both as parents knew that it was nothing to do with his ears,
no,
they still wouldn't take that as an answer. They'd say, no, actually, we're still going to do this. And it seems like it caused unnecessary stress for you both and your son for no real reason.
Yeah, I was like, how can you do this test when he doesn't understand? He can't talk properly. He doesn't understand the instructions you're giving him. They're like, oh no, this is how the test goes, this is how it's got to be done. And I was just like, it's not working.
So once he was signed off by yourself,
yes,
that was when he was free.
Yes.
Okay. What was the next step there? So you've got from 2 year checkup, maybe autism, got autistic traits, 7 months of ear and brain scans and lots of that stuff. You signed him off because you knew that he couldn't understand the instructions and what was going on. Caused it stress and anxiety. So we're about 15 months later now. What was the next step?
Well, he was in preschool, and they were very good with him. And towards the end of preschool, they realised that he needed a one-to-one. And I think they helped me for him to get extra support.
Okay.
So they told me he should go to opportunity group, which will once a week for children with no sort of needs, because they realised that he needed some more extra support. So
we had more support from the schools than we did for the NHS.
Absolutely, yeah. And it was only when I got to see one lady from the hospital side, she started agreeing with me, and she didn't see Noah earlier on because she dealt with more the autistic side. And I didn't get to see her until Noah just turned 4. So it's been 2 years of going through all these other tests. And now, and then when 2 years into that, now we'll start looking at autism.
Okay. So at the nursery, just to backtrack, did they take the lead from you guys when you, but I guess you told them that we were told by at the 2 year checkup that maybe there was autism, autistic traits there. Did they then do little pieces of work with him around things like that, like his social emotional understanding,
yeah,
and things
like
that?
He was very behind, like they noticed he wouldn't join in the groups. He was very sensory. He kept covering himself in like loads of blankets. And they picked up on it more than other people and actual hospitals at the time, because I think they might have known it, but they just felt like he was too young. There's always a chance that he could change. That's what they kept saying.
Yeah.
You know, it might just suddenly come on.
Did you see a difference Did you see a difference in Noah when he went to nursery and then when he come back? Did it seem like the things that they were doing there were doing some good, or did it feel like that it was still, he seemed quite, stressed or...
I didn't see any change until when she started mainstream school. He was still very non-sociable.
He was
hitting out because people couldn't understand him.
Yeah.
His speech did come on, but single words. So literally he only had 2 words, and then he suddenly had loads. They did help him with speech because he was having it at preschool as well, and he was still having speech and language, and he could say loads of single words. So we had to put pictures everywhere so he could say yogurt. He had to see the item visually, and then he could say it. But he couldn't put a sentence together at nursery or anything.
Okay.
But they, speech-wise, but still socially, he didn't change at all. Not even with the opportunity group. I think she helped him maybe with concentration and maybe could sit him down a little bit longer. But socially, that didn't come along.
So what was the opportunity group? Was it more of a... I don't want to say nurturing, because nursery is all nurturing, really. But was it more of a environment that would suit Noah's needs with a group of students
It was only 3 kids in total. Okay.
And was that local as well?
Local. It was right around the corner. Okay. They were great. They had two other kids. Yeah, and he had his own person just for him.
Okay.
Which preschool did end up doing near the end of it. And I just think doing tasks and getting him to understand was what they were for, because his understanding wasn't very good.
Yeah.
So they just did simple tasks for him every couple minutes. And then he did a lot of sensory play, which he loved.
Yeah.
And got him learning through that way.
Okay. Well, one of the things that I spoke with Nick, who is on episode 2 and 3, because the interview went on for so long, is about that understanding in autistic children, that basically you've got these neuro pathways in your brain, and you do something and that is your outcome. And that's the way you do it every time, because that is the way that is safe and you feel okay with. But it might not necessarily be the right way. So for example, if you're in a supermarket and someone nudges you with a trolley at the back, you don't just turn around and punch them or anything like that. No, I don't. Maybe you do, but I don't. But with autistic children and people with low socially and emotionally, that might be the way that they react, because there's no understanding around what has happened, why it's happened, and there's no connection in the brain. And it sounds like that is what Noah was struggling to understand, that we're doing this because of this, and this is like the outcome in it.
Yeah.
And it feels like that opportunity group, he had all the pieces of the puzzle were finally presented to him so he could see a clearer picture, rather than this is what's expected of you, even though you don't necessarily understand it.
Yeah, they helped me out quite a lot, sat me down quite a lot of meetings, because I just thought, oh, it's his learning side. They made me realise it's like home life, just what he's like walking down the street, which I didn't give a thought, that he has no, you know, like for safety.
Yeah.
He would just walk out on the road. And I'm like, what are you doing? Like grabbing him. I didn't think about things like that, like all the tiny little things, like how does he eat? I didn't think about, what's that a big deal? Like, I realised he liked everything so separate.
Yeah.
And he had everything, like, spaghetti bolognese. He couldn't have, that like, normal. He had to have meatballs. He had that clumped together and then have spaghetti separate. He was very much that. But they made me realise on everything, because I was so focused on him learning, because I was worried about schooling and things like that. Then, like, it's not that. It's his whole just lifestyle. And what's he like for sleeping? And I just thought, oh my God, they just made me realise like how much
different.
It's not just autism, it's not obviously just all autism, it's actual life, isn't it? So,
yeah. And I think that before Noah, you probably had no understanding of autism really, besides what you saw in maybe a couple of films and, you know, a couple of maybe when we were at school together, Jack, maybe someone that had a TA with them, when we were younger, we thought, oh, well, that's a bit odd that someone's got someone sat with them.
My older brother's on the spectrum, Andrew, who's got Asperger's syndrome.
Oh, of course, yeah, I forgot about that. Well, what support did he get at school?
But your mum said he didn't get diagnosed until a lot older.
He was like 14, 15.
Yeah, he was like early teenager, so she literally didn't get any support at all.
Away from school.
Yeah.
So you didn't really know much about it when you were younger about him, did you?
No, I always knew he was different. I always had to look after him and always had to do things for him. He was too scared to even buy something at the shop. I had to do it all for him.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's a common thread with people with autism, that the amazing thing is that you guys fought for Noah from as soon as that first little seed was put in your head, that now what you're putting in place is all the early intervention stuff. Because how old is Noah now?
Six.
So all of the stuff that you put in place, which we'll backtrack in a minute, is going to set him up for life, because that's the stuff that needs to be put in place. That it's all these, how will he be an active member of the community? How will he be able to take care for himself when he's older and wash and, you know, go to the shop and things like that? So I think that's to be commended that you fought so hard so early, because obviously you saw that there's something there, and you just kept going even though hospitals and doctors and stuff said it was glue ear and that.
Yeah, it was just so much other stuff. They just didn't want to do it yet.
If I remember right, they've just got lots of people in the waiting list to be diagnosed at the time, and they were so down to funding, and we're going to get into politics.
I think that
it was a struggle.
I think that's a thread as well. For example, in the special schools, we would look to get people diagnosed with different strands of autism, so there's PDA and other things like that. Yes. And a doctor would come in for an hour and sit there and make a assumption off of 1 hour rather than the whole picture, which is the difficulty as well, because you might go and see a specialist or something and Noah might be compliant and might do everything. You think, this is amazing that he's doing it. They say, no, it's not. See you later. And then you're like, well, that doesn't help. So
it's not going to help him for the rest of his life. They turn around and say, he's okay when he's not.
No.
That would be a nightmare.
So, opportunity group. Yes. That lasted for how long?
The whole time he was at preschool, so about 10 months.
Okay, so we're getting into when Noah's about 4 years old now?
Yes.
Okay, so this would be when he's getting to start in school then?
Yes.
Yeah. So what were the options for Noah? Was there just mainstream school? Was there a special school on the table? Was there like a dual placement option?
No, basically it was just mainstream school because he wasn't...
To go look.
No, I made that call.
Wow.
I phoned it myself. But no, they basically said he's not diagnosed yet. We're looking into it.
Okay.
Nothing much could happen. The only thing, the school were good. They came over to the preschool and got to see Noah there for a little while, because he was going to have a one-to-one straight away when he started. And she visited him in the preschool. So that was linked up. So she got to know him a little bit before he came over. And then when he started, he never became full-time like the rest of the kids. Noah had to be part-time from school or from September to May. They wouldn't put him full-time because they weren't getting funding. they weren't getting funding from him because he wasn't diagnosed, so they wouldn't put him in school full time.
So because he wasn't diagnosed, he didn't have an educational healthcare plan then?
No, he didn't have school. He was going for an hour or two a day.
But they wouldn't, because the one-to-one wasn't getting paid, they were getting paid by the school, they couldn't pay her full-time.
I see.
Until he got diagnosed before they could give funding for it.
So the TA that was there for Noah,
yes,
the funding wasn't there for her, which meant that Noah couldn't be there full-time. Okay.
Yeah.
So when he first visited school, he didn't have a diagnosis.
No.
Did he visit the school before he started the school, or was it?
Yeah, he did. Yeah, they got. I think it was in July, so a couple months before we started, they all got to go over and have his little transition day.
Okay, and then when he started full time, he was in a full class with everybody else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. How did he cope with that initially? Because how many were in the class? Maybe 30.
Not good. No. Luckily, his class was not as big as that. Well, they were still. About 22, so still quite a fair few.
Yeah.
But no, when we first dropped him off, he wouldn't walk through the door.
Nice.
Yeah, and a massive meltdown. I tried calming him down, it just didn't work. He just hid underneath the table. And they all had to go straight to assembly, and he refused to do it.
Yeah.
He could cope with the classroom, he couldn't cope with the assembly.
Yeah.
Because the whole school went to the assembly.
Yeah.
So the first 3 weeks he hid. So the TA stayed with him in the classroom.
Okay.
Because they couldn't get him in.
Yeah.
Then I said, I'll come in. I'll stay at school for a while. And I just picked him up and I just took him straight in there. But I sat with him on the side and just held him.
Yeah.
So he didn't have to look at anyone. He was cuddling me. But I just thought, I need to break it down. So I did that for 2 weeks. Then he turned around, did that for a while, then he sat next to me, and it just got gradually, but initially, it took a long time.
Yeah.
I had to be at school for a certain amount of time.
And I suppose because he's built up that, you know, that attachment with you, he trusts you, he knows that you keep him safe, that's what he needed really to get into.
He didn't have that yet with the TA, and it had to be gradually over time for him to be like that with her.
Did they provide any visuals for him at the start to say, this is what you're going
to
do?
It wasn't organised at all. They didn't really know what to do.
No.
They had no timetable, which I was hoping they would have, to let him know how the day was going to go.
Yeah.
That came over time. And then once they got to know Noah, then they put things in.
Okay.
It was just it was just trial and error.
So the first term then, let's say from September to October, was quite difficult then.
He didn't really do much work, he didn't really do much. It was just him coping, being there.
And I think how long was he there for, like an hour at a time for the first bit?
No, he was there in the mornings, and then I had to come and pick him up about lunchtime.
Okay, so with the mornings, did he cope with being in the mornings all the time? Did you ever have to go and pick him up early, or was he okay with...
No, he was okay. He just kept himself, like, if they sat on the carpet, he might sit in the corner.
Yeah.
He just always kept a bit of distance.
Well,
he had his own desk to work at.
Yeah.
And, just... I think the TA struggled with Noah.
Yeah.
She did. She didn't have that click with him.
No training as well.
Yeah, she had no experience with autistic kids.
Okay.
She found it quite hard. He rebelled against her a lot. He knew how to get round her a little bit.
Yeah.
So like playground, he used to climb to the top frame. Everyone else went in, he wouldn't come down.
Yeah. These are all things now. It's all jogging my mind for certain children that I've taught before. And one of the interviews that I've done with Nick that I'm going back to again is, Nick made a really amazing point, which is that children, basically you wouldn't hire someone to fix your car that isn't a mechanic. So why would you hire someone to be with someone who's autistic with no training? And it's almost a double-edged sword, because like you said with the funding, which we're not going to get into politics because this podcast lasts about 8 hours. But with...
You'll get some death threats.
because of the lack of training and the lack of understanding, then there's no real understanding of how Noah's brain works and how what support he needs. And I suppose at that time, because Noah would feel like, who is this person? Are they here to help me? Is this someone I can trust? But they don't understand me. That will all be going on in his head.
Yeah.
And he would think, basically he'll be going to fight or flight. And that would be for him hiding away, which is, I can't cope with this situation, so I choose not to. And it was when you went in, Jenny, to sit with him in the assemblies that it almost started to click in his head that this can be a safe place because Mum's here, so obviously it's okay.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
So we've got first term of school. So when did the diagnosis come? So we started school in September.
It didn't come till May.
So he was there for nearly a full year before the diagnosis came. So talk me through the October then until May. Did you have more appointments that you had to go to? Was it you calling?
It calmed down a little bit because I think they were completely looking into autism. So he didn't have to keep going to hospitals to do like random checks. He just got to see, he had to see three specialists.
Okay.
And if all three of them said that he had autism, he could get diagnosed.
Okay, and was that organised through the school?
No, that was organised through the GP.
Okay.
Yeah.
Did the school keep logs and did they present some evidence towards it?
Yeah, definitely. He had quite a lot of input and obviously speech and language.
Mm.
He sought at school
with
their input in as well. So.
Okay.
It started moving on once they said, we're going to look into autism.
Okay, so...
It took a while.
It sounds like that.
It's just waiting for the appointment. And then once you got the letter, it's going to be 2 months' time. Right.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And then you had to wait for the second person. So there's three people we had to see.
I've had to wait 6 months just for the appointment for the operation on my back. That's not even the operation. It's 9 months later after that.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
That's what I mean. It's just, and because it was three people, we had to wait for the first one. And once the first person, okay, now I'm going to write my stuff out, then you'll get a letter later on about the second person.
Yeah.
So that's how it went.
So it was three separate appointments. It started to speed up a bit, but during that time at school, so after the first half term, which was quite difficult, how did the next term between October and Christmas?
He gradually just got better. You know, work was still an issue, like concentrating, but that wasn't the teachers weren't concerned about that.
No.
They wanted him to be able to just be with the children, be able to get the routine sort of like, going like, so yeah, he started going in the assemblies, but he didn't sit on the floor, he sat on the benches with the teachers, which they were happy with, that he was just in there. PE, they let him wear his school uniform because he wouldn't get dressed, but they were like, long as he's doing PE again, that's fine.
Well, that's really good that the school understood that, because some of the stories that I would hear, that schools are very regimented in the way that they think, so they wouldn't adapt for a person that doesn't have a diagnosis or EHCP. Right. They would be very rigid with that. So it's really good that they identify that actually the education, the work bit is secondary, and we actually just want to build up his confidence and understanding and
the
knowledge of what
school
is.
Very good. Even the head teacher.
I think they realised, like, without an ability to communicate, he's not going to be able to learn anything you're trying to communicate to him.
They focused just on speech and language, and because Noah didn't know colours or shapes before he started school, they literally just did shapes, colours and counting to 20. So they basically just did preschool stuff with Noah in reception.
Yeah.
And he just gradually, he got it over time, and he started speaking sentences before he finished reception.
Nice.
Because they only focused on that. They didn't force him to do writing. They didn't force him to do loads of reading. They just needed him to... They were just doing cards with him, like picture cards, and just trying to get him...
Just lots of visual stuff and
learning
through play and stuff like that.
Again, his understanding, and just socialise, trying to get him to be around the other children without hitting out.
Yeah.
But calm him down and...
Did Noah hit out a little bit at school then?
He didn't... on his first when he first visited the school, he bit a child really bad, made the child bleed. Now, the thing with Noah, I'm not giving him saying that was all right, the child took his hat and was running away from Noah, and Noah got very upset.
Noah doesn't deal with bullies that well. He just beats him up.
Well, the thing is with Noah, yeah. In his head, he wouldn't understand what had even happened there. It would have been, that's mine.
Yeah.
Whereas with his very little communication, as you said,
yeah.
it would have all just been actions from that action of biting would have just been one of fear of I want my hat back,
yeah.
and one of absolute like frustration and confusion because yeah. he just wouldn't have understood what was going on.
That's what most of the teachers said. They said, not saying that, you know, obviously got told off no matter what he did, but they said they could see why he did things. Like a kid was on the bike and they could see that Noah was like, it's like trying to say it's my turn, even though he couldn't,
yeah,
the kids wouldn't get off it and they kept just ignoring Noah. So then he would push him off the bike to get on the bike. So
because that would be the way that he spoke then, that yeah. his actions would be his words.
Yeah, so they tried to explain that to other children that Noah couldn't always okay. communicate. You need to, I know it's hard for them, they were young themselves yeah. to see how he, you know, visually, like his face expressions, but still that.
It's human nature, isn't it? You know, if you can't communicate with someone, you don't understand them, people are going to try and take advantage of them, and Noah's not going to have that. Noah's a bit like I was. Gets very angry very quickly.
He's very frustrated because no yeah. one could understand.
And I think that is the underlying thing with people with autism, is that it's a very frustrating world
yeah.
if people don't get you. Like the example that, again, I'm going to go back to Nick, the example that Nick used is if you're really upset and something's happened and your partner went to you, don't just get over it, it's nothing. That would make you worse. That would make you go, well, actually, hang on a minute, I feel this way and it's okay to feel this way. And
yeah.
that's the way that I've always worked with children with autism, which is, it's okay to feel that way. That's a normal feeling, you know, yeah. and you don't really label the child as what has happened. It's the behaviour
yeah.
and you can detach them. It isn't you've bitten someone. That is what you've done. It's take a step back and unpick it, which it just sounds like he was just very confused.
I used to get so upset. It's getting nothing about it. I was like, oh no, I was so embarrassed to go to the school. I felt terrible. All the parents would look at me.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, oh my God, what do I do? And then I spoke to the teacher and she was just amazing. She's like, no, it wasn't acceptable. I told him off, but I can generally see why he did it.
Yeah.
She didn't make me feel bad feeling that way or anything. But, you know, she was really good.
Yeah.
Well, that's.
But it was hard because I was so scared to go anywhere with it. Because I thought, oh my God, he's going to hit someone, he's going to bite someone.
Yeah, and that would be that you were left for a while. Oh. It's all right. That would be that you were left with that window between that September and May where he didn't have that bit of support,
no.
where he was almost thrown to the wolves, shall we say. It was thrown into an experience that was so yeah. alien to him.
Yeah.
So if we fast forward then to May, when he got the diagnosis, how quickly did it take the school then to implement the TA to be with him longer? Because I can imagine that Noah
basically
wasn't there.
Straight away.
So he went full time.
Yeah, once I said I've got my diagnosis, it got sent straight to them.
Brilliant.
They put straight full time.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And then what did they do with the TA? Because I remember speaking to you a few months ago about this and you said that they sent the TA and then autism courses and
they
things
were
like that.
Put her on training, but unfortunately she left after 2 months of him getting diagnosed. So okay. that was a big blow. Mm. It was a big blow at the time, but now I look back on it, I'm happy about it. She was a nice woman, but she just couldn't cope with Noah's ways. And I just don't think Noah clicked with her.
Okay.
But it was gutting because I was.
She had a very strong Polish accent.
Yeah, I think that. Yeah, she did, and I think it was hard to understand her because he couldn't talk so clearly.
He's got a bit of a lisp through his speech where he struggled to learn to talk.
Yeah, I just think she wasn't firm enough because me and Jack became quite firm at home with Noah.
Yeah.
Because we know he can get away with things. He's smarter than what people
like
think.
It's like a native Scotsman.
So it's like, he'll literally give me a bag and I would initially just like put things away for him. And then people like, the opportunity group were like, he can do that himself. Stop letting him do that to you. And then I started to become a bit firmer.
Yeah.
But when I dropped him off at school, he has to put his lunchbox away coat. He was handing it to the TA. if she was doing it.
Okay.
So yeah. He knew he had the upper hand on her.
Yeah.
So I think that's why if she struggled like to get him down from frame, struggled to do things for him because he knew he could get away with it, to be fair. So she just didn't have that as his main teacher, have that firmness with him.
And I think that, well, I think I know what your answer is going to be, but when you became more firmer and the boundaries were clearer, did Noah seem to just kick a little bit better then?
He did. Yeah. His behaviour just really come on. Like, it just changed. He just knew. Yeah,
and I think that that is a real common thing that lots of people with autism will, and people that teach people with autism like myself, is that as soon as you put in those firm boundaries, then the child feels safe because they're in an area where they know what is expected. It's when you step outside the grey area, so Noah climbing to the top of the climbing frame and being told to come down, he won't know why he's not allowed up there, because it never would have been maybe properly explained to him.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you're saying with this T8, it just didn't click for whatever reason. And that's all right, because in life, you don't get on with people, so you can't expect everyone to get on with everyone else.
Yeah, I just think she just found it very difficult. And I was very worried. I was like, oh no, we've lost someone, you know, what are we going to do? But there was quite a young woman. She was only 19. She was a dinner lady girl there. But she wanted eventually to become a TA. She was doing her courses and stuff. And she just gelled with Noah at lunch breaks. There was five people around Noah trying to get him down. She'll just walk straight out. Noah, get down now. We need to go and do this. He would come straight down.
Yeah. Brilliant.
He listened to her and he just liked her, and she was very good and won lunch. And so she was the one who became his TA in year one. And since then, their relationship, she just gets Noah. Not all the time, obviously it has ups and downs, but most of the time she's the one to progress Noah the most.
In that respect, Noah's no difference from the other kid. Do you remember what it was like in school? I mean, if we had a teacher who was a bit of a soft one, we used to take the mick.
Yeah.
To take advantage of the situation. And the same thing with Noah. I mean, if someone's soft with him, he will take advantage of it.
And I think that is, again, just a
human nature.
Yeah, it is. And also with people with autism, they can be very egocentric. How is this going to help me? How do I feel when I'm doing this? And because he's always going to seek out to make himself feel good, self-gratification and things like that, if he can take an inch, he will probably take a mile with someone, because he knows that
he tries it with us all the time.
And that
he does it to anyone. Yeah, he can. Yeah.
And also that will continue. Wait, you know, he'll be like any normal teenager, any normal adult, where if you can get away with something, if you could do something,
it could
be no different. So we got to year one when he was given this new TA.
Yes.
Was she given training then?
She went on the same, we got offered a course,
an
early bird course, so she came on that with us.
Oh, brilliant.
Which was really good experience.
Was that the course that you were then offered after the diagnosis to understand autism a little bit better?
Well, actually, I got put on that course, on the waiting list, because there was quite a long waiting list, before he was diagnosed, because the woman said, I don't want you waiting any longer.
So they knew that he would get the diagnosis.
Yeah.
And the waiting list is months?
I think it was the following year, January, so yeah, it was half a year.
Okay.
Yeah, more.
So you got put on the waiting list, say, April, March, and you had to wait until the next year to then go on the course. Do you think that if you would have got on that course when Noah was in preschool or in that opportunity group, do you think that would have helped you guys a lot better leading into when he started school rather than waiting for everything to happen?
Yeah, definitely. That course was really good, wasn't it?
I don't remember. At this time, I was on a lot of pain. This is when I was in bed with catheters and stuff hanging out with me. Fine.
Yeah, so there's a lot of a fuzzy area there for you.
I don't remember a lot because I was on really strong pain medication, waiting for my operation.
It was a hard time because we obviously just had a baby. Really, you weren't well, and then I had to go through all this with Noah.
Yeah.
So it was quite a hard time. So it was mostly me on my own. Yeah. You did come to the early bird course, but actually, if we had it earlier, you probably wouldn't have been able to come.
Yeah.
Would you?
No.
But I definitely think it would have helped earlier. Because
so what were the sort of things that you were taught on the course? Was it a few weeks long?
Oh yeah, it was 6 weeks, 8 weeks?
Something like that.
We had to go once a week at the Eustock school.
Okay.
With two people that have been in it for like 20 years and had loads of experience. And they were just really down to earth. And it was nice because it wasn't a massive group.
Mm.
It was all mostly all couples, wasn't it? Like parents. And then maybe one grandparent came. But I think it was only like... when TAs, all TAs were invited. I don't know, six lots of groups, but like just the couples wise.
Yeah.
So it was very intimate. And they always made time for all of us. And we all got to go. And we just had to do like group discussions on, we just took it separate, like social, speech, everything was, it was split up into groups.
So it was all broken down and it was more of a guide to autism, these are the sort of barriers that you may expect.
Yes.
These are the reasons for those barriers, and then some advice and strategies on how to
get over that. With everything, with going to the toilet, schooling, like anything we wanted to bring up personally as well.
Yeah.
They would go through it.
We only had a few issues.
But it was nice to hear what. Yeah. It was nice to see what other families and what. Like, because you really felt alone, you really did, and then you realise, like, oh my God, you know, what it's like, how different they all are.
Yeah.
Like, it makes you really realise.
Because a statistic came out a few months ago that they've said that in England they think every 6 in 100 people are on the autistic spectrum. So if you put that into mainstream schools, in those class of 30, you're looking at 2 or 3 children on the autistic spectrum in every single class in England now.
Yeah, and there were one other kid in his class.
But you're talking about when we were at school. I'm sure there were, but at the time, you just don't, because you're in your own teenage bubble, aren't you? Like me and you, we'd be talking about, you know, going down the park after hours to swing some vodka or something. You know, we weren't really concerned about what was going on, and I think that.
Well, except for when Scott had a bomb threat.
Oh, there's loads of stuff. I really don't... That sort of time is very blurry for me because I was all hung up on relationships as well. I was a real sensitive soul.
I was more worried about... I can't remember his second name. Scott in my class, he got in trouble. Like, he had a bomb sort of called to his house because he was making small bombs in his bedroom.
It was all really strange, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I wasn't really sure what was going on.
But you were older then. When he was in the small school.
Yeah.
I think the kids are a lot, like, they're really much more understanding at that age. That's why I get scared about Noel getting up, like, when he gets older. Because they're good. They are very good at his age.
Making sure that the kids are aware that there are other kids, without drawing attention to Noel specifically, that there are people with these sorts of conditions is what I've asked them to sort of do during school. It's that same thing, that fear of the unknown.
Well, it's just... raising awareness, isn't it? Because there's some people that I think there's just a common misconception about autism, and I think that it's one of those things that in, say, some schools you have a lot of older TAs that have been there 10, 15, 20 years, and 10, 15, 20 years ago it wasn't as mainstream, shall we say, as it is now. I think that there's a lot of, shall we say, just misunderstandings around behaviour and choosing of behaviour, when actually, in my point of view, there's no choice around behaviour. The behaviour is a voice. The behaviour, there's something behind the behaviour.
Yeah.
It's up to adults to unpick it. And it sounds like that the school where Noah is in now, they're unpicking that and they understand, because there's a lot of schools that, you know, as soon as you're violent towards another student, that could have been it. You could have been gone.
Yeah.
So it sounds like that you've got a real understanding place that are meeting his needs, because he's still there full time now.
Yes.
He still has the same TA.
Yes.
And what's he like in group settings now? Is it still a little bit hit and miss, or does he?
The teacher said if he walked into the club, well, a lady did come in to assess Noah.
Yeah.
They didn't tell him who he was initially, and she said, if you didn't pinpoint him out afterwards, I would have never guessed he had autism.
Yeah.
How good he was in the classroom with other children. He doesn't sit on his own anymore. He sits in a group on the table. He follows the instructions. He doesn't. She just said, I really wouldn't have thought it.
And then she sit down and speak to him. He wouldn't pick up on it.
That's a credit then to the work that the school and yourselves have been doing with him, because it's obviously working at the moment if he's taking part in group activities.
Yeah.
And I can imagine that he's doing the work still a little bit behind in what he's doing.
Yeah, he is. He's on, because he didn't really do reading in reception, so he started doing reading. Okay, I think I've got a chart. Yeah, he's on yellow now, which is reception year one books.
Okay.
As before, he only started reading like last year.
Yeah.
So the fact that he's gone up to yellow, they were like quite surprised, because he just couldn't do anything in reception, so he didn't even start his reading in reception.
So what's his curriculum look like at school now? Is he doing the same lessons as everyone else, but is it differentiated for his needs?
Basically, maths, he's kind of doing the same level as everyone else.
I think that with, sorry to cut you off, I think with autism, I think that the cut and dry of maths that is right or it's wrong,
it suits him
a little bit better, whereas the grey area of English is, you've done it, but it's not right, it's not wrong, you can improve it, is it a little bit more difficult to understand?
He gets days where he'll write a whole page and do a story, and then he'll get other days like, I can't do it. And they're like, well, we know you can do it, Noah, because you've done it the day before.
Yeah.
And he'll just get a panic, like, Noah doesn't like to fail. And I think with English, he's worried that if he spells it slightly wrong, he can't
do
it. He gets really panicked.
That's the next thing to teach him, is that failure is a good thing.
Yeah, it's just a way of him learning. Because he has to do spelling tests every 3 weeks.
Okay.
And he has the same spellings, like 75 words, but they just do it for the whole year.
Yeah.
He just, every time he doesn't mean, he's like, I'll do the ones I know. No, but the whole point is you've got to do the ones you don't know. And he just doesn't like to get it
just
wrong.
Just wants to be in a safe zone then.
Mm. And then with maths, I think because he is more, like, is a definite answer with English, he can kind of like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Is that the right thing I'm writing?
Too.
Yeah.
He likes doing experiments.
And he does love science, yeah.
Well, what I, again, with people with autism that I've gained over my 10 plus years working with children, is that people with autism are really curious, and I think there's a common misconception that people with autism just want to just do one thing and that's all that they want to do, but actually if you introduce new things to them, they're really curious about them. They're like, well, what's, you know, they what's this, what are we doing today, and they want to know why you're doing it, which I think is, science is a really, really positive one.
No, it's really like topics they've just been doing about Africa, and he's just been coming home like talking about it, absolutely loving it, hasn't he? And then he does love the topics that just suddenly get brought up, and then they would do about crocodiles, so he does get really involved every time they change it.
Do they do topic in the afternoon then, so you do your
your
English, math, science in the morning,
and then topic in the afternoon. Okay. Yeah.
What about PE now? Is he getting changed to PE?
He does get changed, yeah. It took a long time.
Yeah.
He had a bit of hit and miss in year one as well, but no, he will completely get dressed now.
Rides his own bike now. At Stayworthers too.
Amazing.
Yeah, that took a long time. Started in June last year.
Great
to swim. Started doing it in January, and now he's just started swimming.
Yeah, he's on his second grade.
Yeah, second grade now.
What about getting changed? Does he need support getting changed, or can he do it on his own?
Again, if you could use me to his full advantage, just like take the socks off. I'm like, no, you take your socks off. So he can do it. Most of the time he does, but sometimes he tries to get away with it.
Does he get given social stories at school? So explaining step by step, or is it just So is it a thing, say for PE, for example, do they give him, like, what I used to do when I used to take a group swimming is I used to pin a social story on the back of one of the girls' doors because she was 14. I thought it was not really appropriate for someone to go in and dress a 14-year-old girl.
Mm-hmm.
So even though this went on for a little bit of time with, like, female TAs going in, I wasn't really accepting of that. I was like, no, this is a life skill that we're going to have to try and do. Pin the social story on the back of the door that said, just literally dry yourself, pants, socks, trousers, T-shirt, and then you just have someone go in at the end and just fix the collar and buckle the trousers up or something like that.
They did that with Noah sort of like last year. And they did that with toilet, because Noah always wanted help with the toilet because he did struggle when he was younger. And she can't go in there and sort him out. You know, he needs to learn to do it himself. So it was a gradual thing. But yeah, you need to take that off now. Now you need to wipe yourself. Once he's done that, right, now you need to go, you need to wash your hands. I don't need to do it for you. You can do it yourself.
Just simple instructions.
Just step by step, yeah.
with toilet base, did he, was he able to ask to go to the toilet? Or how did it work at the start?
At the start, he used to just walk out of the classroom and go to the toilet. And they're like, oh, Noah's gone. So, yeah, he never used to say, and they're like, no, you need to inform us if you need, because he used to sometimes go in his pants, and I used to take pants into the school.
Yeah.
And they're like, no, you know when you need to go, you need to give us some warning.
Yeah.
Because then they'll have to, like, sort him out and do things like that. And so that was a long time, wasn't it? I think that was only done last year.
See, the thing is, it sounds like he's made such amazing progress since that May when he was in preschool or reception, whatever they call early years, to now is he in year two.
Yeah.
So it sounds like in that 18 months, because you're saying, I think it was then, that he's just come on leaps and bounds since he's got this.
Since he's developed a little group of friends that treat him well.
I think it's because he's in a small school and they stay with the same class.
Yeah.
Plus the TA.
So they grow up with him, as I went. I had like 5 different years. Yeah. And we swapped all the time, so I think that makes such a difference.
To have an understanding and firm TA with him is perfect as well.
But everyone gets involved. Even when his head teacher did leave after the first year, and he got a new one, but she was amazing. She got so involved with Noah, and he won the cup at the end of the year for the most in progress in after reception, because they couldn't believe, like, he couldn't even walk into the assembly. He performed on the last year.
He sang on stage.
On assembly, he wouldn't do the Christmas one, which was only 3 months in. He stood there, didn't put the outfit on, but on the last one, he pretended he was a snake, and he was at the head bit, and he was going around and leaded everyone. So they were like, she just said things like that. He won the trophy for the most progress, didn't he, the whole year? And he had to get up in front of everyone in the whole school, and he did it, which was just like, oh my gosh. When he started, he wouldn't even walk in to now going out to get a trophy. Was amazing.
Well, it sounds like he's just at a place where they understand him. They're meeting his needs every day.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, some days you'll probably get him come home and he's grumpy, like some children are. Other days he comes home like, yeah, fine.
He comes out every day and he lets me know how his day is, but by his hand, well, he tells me.
Yeah.
He'll be like, oh, it's okay today.
His TA used to write a short story in his book every day of how he's been, if he's done his work and stuff.
Like a homeschool book thing?
Yeah, just informal.
So whenever he'd get home, I'd read through the book and we'd discuss it with him, whether he'd get game time, and that would be like his encouragement to work at school and actually make an effort.
Mm-hmm.
If he didn't make an effort, he gets no game time, he gets no fun, no put in.
Well, that,
quite
that,
firm with him, well, that way.
Well, that's a really good point that I was going to go on to about the home and school link, because some children with autism, they treat them like two separate islands, so they can't really ever mix. So, like, I for example, in the secondary school I'm at the moment, if it's a non-uniform day, the autistic children will still come in their school uniform, because it's school, this is my school clothes, I'm not going to mix and match.
Yeah.
How is Noah talking about school, or you going into school if you ever have to go in for, like, parents' evenings, or performances and stuff, is he okay with that? Does he mind the two worlds?
No, he gets really,
he likes it.
He loves it. If I'm like, oh, I've got to come in today to see your work, oh, well, okay, he'll get it all out and prepare it, and he gets so excited
he likes us to feel proud
of him. We are quite close to his teachers as well. You know, his one TA just turned 21, we just bought her a cup and he gives it to her. He likes the interaction that we all get on. He doesn't keep it separate.
Well, it sounds like he's happy because he feels like he's succeeded. He feels like he's not failing. Mm. And that's why he's getting on so well, because what a lot of children will do is they'll feel like they don't fit into a place at school for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And then that's when, you know, you feel like you're failing. But like I keep saying, it sounds like he's just struck gold with such an understanding school that are just putting resources into him, even though it's probably limited resources because of funding and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But the TA seems to get it.
It's the people
are good. The school gets it, and there's no overreaction to whatever he was doing. It sounds like those sort of behaviours have almost disappeared then at school now.
Oh, God, yeah. He never has, instances, does he? Like, he doesn't get out at all.
Not really anything serious. Not like, he doesn't sudden suddenly switch or go violent or anything like
no,
that.
No, it's like accidental, like just a normal playground fun. It's never like...
Just like rough and tumble
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, exactly. He
and
never
if
has...
If someone hurts him, he'll go to the teacher.
Oh yeah, he knows how to talk to the teacher. He goes straight to the
I finally, now. We've got that empathy into him. I drilled it into him since he was very young, that you have to look after people struggling you because they need that help.
Yeah.
So if he sees someone crying now, he'll go up to them and ask them if they're okay and if they need help and stuff. He's so good with that sort of thing.
Mm.
For an autistic child doing that, we've done really well.
It sounds like you've got amazing work. Yeah. And before I finish, because we're nearly going for an hour, is you said he's got a small group of friends now.
Mm.
Do they come over to the house? Does he go over to their house? Is it like a real...
Yeah, Ashley apparently is his girlfriend.
Okay.
Dave, what's going on there? She went to her house just last week for dinner. And then I pick him up. So he goes there for a few hours. He walks back with them to their house. Or she comes here.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he does have a play with Ashley. And he socialises. It used to be all girls. Because I think girls understood him a bit better. But now he's got a good close mate of boys.
Oh, good.
So, yeah, I think there's three boys in his class that he's really close to. But to be honest with you, he doesn't pick one person. He will play with anyone.
Is that curiosity again, I suppose? Yeah. He's like, likes the different personalities. And
Yeah, and older kids. He plays a lot with the year fours, apparently. So, like, he'll go out and play football with them. And they're really good at looking after him. A lot of the older kids are very good at looking after Noah.
Yeah. What... year group does the school go to that he's at the moment?
Year six.
Okay, so he's there for a long time then?
Yeah.
Okay, so there's what I was going to ask is about secondary school, but actually there's no point even thinking about that because when we were younger it was first school, middle school, secondary school, so after year three you'd move on, whereas now he has a big chunk of time at this primary school, so onwards that puts them really.
Yeah, definitely. That's good.
Right. I've kept you for about an hour, so I'm going to finish now. But what I want to say is thank you for letting me speak about that, because it sounds like the early years of Noah's life were just confusing and misunderstanding, and people not being as helpful as they could do, I suppose, is the way to put it. But as soon as he got the diagnosis, which a lot of people, you know, mainstream media and stuff say, oh, why do you need the diagnosis? Well, actually, you didn't get anything until you got the diagnosis. It was all just... confusing.
Until
if you were to track Noah from September when he went to starting school to then year one and now even to now, it's a completely different child because he's calm, he feels safe, he's happy, and he wants to be at school. He doesn't see it as a scary, confusing place anymore.
No, definitely not. Absolutely.
Right. What I'm going to do is I'm going to finish up in about a couple of months' time. What we'll do is we'll just do a little catch-up, like 5 or 10 minutes, just to see what's going on and see if everything's still going great. But, yeah, thank you for your time. I really appreciate it.
So I just want to thank Jack and Jenny for trusting me with their story, really. It was quite emotional at times. You'd probably hear that Jenny... go a little bit emotional at one point or another, and I think that just shows how isolating it can be to have this fight on your hands trying to get a diagnosis and just feeling like you're failing or feeling like you're not in control of the situation and just wanting to do right by their son. And I think that will be a position that a lot of you out there who's listening with sons or daughters waiting for diagnosis will be feeling. I think they feel more supported once they got the diagnosis, because then the ball started rolling, obviously. Their son felt more comfortable in school because they had an assigned person to work with him, able to do more hours, just feeling part of a community rather than going to this place for a couple of hours a week, in fact, and then that was it. So I'm really pleased that it's working out for Jack and Jenny. As I said at the start of the podcast, they are my friends. I've known them for a number of years now. And really, as I said, because they were struggling and now things seem to be going right, we will check in with Jack and Jenny again in 2 or 3 months' time just to see how things are going, because things can change from time to time. And as you guys will know out there, things can be great and working for a month or two. Then all of a sudden, regression happens, and that can be a difficult time as well. So we'll go back and we'll check in with them. thank you very much. If you've listened to this, it is a passion project of mine, as you keep hearing me bang on Twitter about. It is a passion project. It is just something that I'm looking to do to try and promote a bit of autism awareness. If you want to follow me on Twitter, it's at The Sensory Hour. My personal one is at Dumakin911, which is Dumakin. But all the autism stuff is, is on the Sensory Hour handle. Give me a review on iTunes. Let me know what you think. And obviously, if you want to get involved, send me a DM, and I'm more than happy to organise an interview or a statement from yourselves, which is what I've had happen from a few parents and a few educational professionals already, which is superb. Thanks again, and you will hear from me in 2 weeks' time with another episode of The Sensory Hour. Thank you.